From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I am humbled. I am honored. Thank you to the team. Thank you to our all supporters. Thank you for the people of Illinois for giving us this opportunity. On to victory. On to victory. To those of you around the state of Illinois who wanted to send me a message, let me be clear. I have heard you.
You know, as I know, that Bruce Rauner had to be challenged in this election.
Yeah.
You knew that. But today, the popular revolt against the political ruling class fell just a bit short.
I'm J.B. Pritzker, and I'm going to beat Bruce Rauner.
The voters of Illinois have spoken, and now we must follow their lead and give Mr. Pritzker the support that he has earned.
And it was a hard campaign where we had some important disagreements, but we agreed on certain things, and we agreed on one very important thing, the absolute essential need for the future of our state for us to come together to defeat Bruce Rauner.
Well, after months of ads and attacks, Bruce Rauner and J.B. Pritzker have emerged as the Republican and Democratic nominees for governor. We're going to look back at the primary and what lies ahead for a race that is sure to break spending records going forward. We're also going to recap some other contests around the state. That's coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and joining me in studio, Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House reporter, and Daisy Contreras, IPR's reporter. And in Chicago, our guest is from member station WBEZ, Tony Arnold. Tony, good to have you on once again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, Tony, let me start with you. The primary is done, so let's start on the Republican side. Bruce Rauner, I guess, can exhale. He narrowly beat the conservative Jeannie Ives, and he won, but in some ways comes out looking even weaker than before.
Yeah, and it was just so close, and it tightened up, and you could kind of tell from the Rauner campaign's body language that just how that they were nervous or at least a little concerned going into the primary day how this was going to shake out. And over the last few days, just looking at the results here of how Rauner ended up doing, it's noteworthy that State Representative Jeannie Ives won most of the collar counties around Cook County, which the Republican, no matter who it is going to really need those areas come November to beat a Democrat in this state. And to see that Rauner won Cook County and Lake County, but not DuPage, Will, Kane, McHenry, Kendall, that just means he's got a lot of work to do to heal these wounds in the Republican Party. And right now it seems like a lot of people on the Ives side are not anxious to be healing those wounds, I should say.
And Brian, I think that she's not, at least as the time we sat down here, apparently is not conceded in the race yet for governor. So.
Well, I mean, she's conceded that she lost, but she hasn't thing where you call the person and say we're going to work together and let's come together as a party and friend of the show Dave McKinney had the story the other day where he asked her who would be the better governor, right, Bruce Rauner or J.B. Pritzker, and she wasn't ready to answer that question really. I mean, she has said, well, I'm a Republican, I'll support the governor eventually, but she is not really endorsing him and not looking like she's going to be doing a lot to bring the party together.
And Daisy,
hasn't she said that she will vote for him, but she will not endorse him,
right,
nor will she campaign with
right
him?
Right, exactly.
Well, Daisy, the governor did say, I believe, after this was all over, that he's heard from that side of the party, that wing of the party, that they're not happy with him, and he's heard that message. What message has he heard?
Well, he hasn't really been clear as to what really that message is. He knows that they're unhappy with him, but he won't give specifics. I mean, even Jeannie Ives, during her campaign, she gave those specifics. She said that those Republicans that were going for her, that were supporting her, were unhappy with Rauner's decision on the abortion bill that he signed. They're unhappy with his stance on immigration, on sanctuary cities. And so, yeah, I mean, he won't give those specifics, but he really wants Jeannie Ives' base to go and follow him.
And just to be clear, he has not come around and said, you know, I made a mistake by signing this legislation or these taking a certain position, but he's not indicated anything like that.
Oh, no. He wants everyone to just kind of follow him on the things that they do agree on, like putting in term limits, things like that that he's been talking for the last couple of months.
And I would say there's a couple other interesting things to stop and think about that, that Jeannie Hives talked about. One, she would not denounce the tax increase. I mean, she says, yes, we should have lower taxes in Illinois eventually. But in the short term, she says the amount of debt we have is immoral. And so she is one who would not say, yes, I vow to cut taxes no matter what, because she's concerned with the amount of Illinois' unpaid bills. And she used that word, immoral. Another thing she criticized the governor for is his fixation on House Speaker Michael Madigan and blaming him for what I've said was his own failures. And so I wonder if that's the message the governor heard, because that kind of goes directly against exactly what he started campaigning on, right? You know, the morning after both he and Pritzker, which we can get to later, the emails were timestamped, interestingly, I thought, 8:29 and 8:30 on Wednesday morning from the two of them. Here's our attack ads. We're starting the fall campaign already.
Charlie, Jeannie Hives, let's give her due. I mean, she nearly got half the vote in that Republican primary. But at the same time, was this more about Bruce Rauner or about any message she had?
Oh, I think it was very much about Bruce Rauner, and I think there were a couple elements. We've already discussed the fact, as Daisy pointed out, he signed a couple of bills that are really abhorrent to a lot of conservative people who are very strongly pro-life and who are very much anti-immigrant. And so there's that group that he totally alienated. As a matter of fact, the abortion bill was the straw that broke the camel's back, to use the old cliche, and got Jeannie Hives into the race in the first place. But I think there were also a lot of other people who voted for Jeannie Hives who those two issues may not have been make or break issues, but who resented the fact that Bruce Rauner is such a liar and that he lied about those particular, well, not necessarily the immigration bill, but he certainly lied about the abortion bill when he told conservative lawmakers, Hives included, and when he even told the Cardinal of Chicago, Blaise Cupich, that he was going to veto that bill, and then he turned around and signed it. So there's these people who are very disenchanted with Bruce Rauner and who are probably not going to vote for J.B. Pritzker. And I think for the Rauner camp, the concern has to be that these folks are just going to stay home, or if they do go out to vote, they're going to take a pass on the governor's race in November.
Well, you mentioned, you know, that some feel that he lied over this, or he at least was not upfront about what his plan was. In that respect, though, we've seen governors throughout the years who will say one thing and then they say, after further study, I've come to a different conclusion on it. Isn't that fair to say that he could have done that?
I can't recall another governor who has flat out lied to his face to the head of the Catholic population in the Archdiocese of Chicago. And to follow up on that, yeah, politicians always say stuff. Anybody who believes the ads that they see, that they've been inundated with, and the flyers and the garbage, anybody who believes that is really very gullible, I guess, to be charitable.
But Brian, aren't there people who favor those positions? I mean, in fairness, I mean, yes, he may have angered those folks. Is he gaining anything from the other side who might say, hey, I agree with the governor on these things?
Well, I doubt it, though. And the reason I say that is because those are, in today's Democratic Party, those are kind of basic issues. It's almost like a litmus test to be a Democrat. You have to be pro-choice. So he's not going to win any favor with those people who have a long list of reasons of why they think he doesn't deserve a second term. And I was going to say, you can't believe the advertising, but in dealings with individual legislators and leaders, there has to be a certain level of trust. I think Rauner has broken this. And there are some issues where you just don't lie flat out the way that he had on several occasions to the people who he needs to support him in the General Assembly.
I do think, to give the governor his due, that his position on abortion is a sincerely held one. I mean,
oh, sure.
he had answered a questionnaire in the 2014 campaign basically saying that he would do just the thing he did in terms of signing the bill to expand public funding for people on Medicaid or state employees of abortion. But, you know, it is this question, Charlie, about, you know, him lying. Now, it's interesting that some Republican lawmakers are willing to get back on board. I saw State Representative Peter Breen quoted this week, who is probably one of the most anti-abortion legislators in the – I mean, he literally was a lawyer and still is doing legal work for the Thomas More Society, which is a Catholic legal organization that often goes to court to challenge abortion laws, and in fact is the lead lawyer challenging this very abortion law that the governor signed. But he said he was now supporting the governor in the fall campaign after having supported Ives. But there are others who will not. And, you know, it's still – you know, we haven't even talked about the national mood and Democratic – hopes for increased turnout driven by President Trump, but you know, the governor has his work cut out for him this year.
Just keep in mind too, on just to Brian's point, that Rauner campaigned on this in 2014. Rauner's been basically trying to run a general election campaign since 2017. I think he kind of overlooked Representative Ives in many ways. Look forward to what it would take for a Republican to be reelected in Illinois in 2018 when you're up against the attitudes toward Trump, which in Illinois are very strong against him. He does not poll well and everything else. And so Rauner basically took the campaign ads that are inevitable come October from Democrats. They happen every election cycle for governor that say that are geared toward women voters, and by signing that abortion bill, he's taken those ads off the table for Democrats to use.
And I was just to emphasize a point Tony made earlier too about the body language of the Rauner campaign heading into the primary and how nervous they were getting. I think it's interesting to look back now on that bill he vetoed last week about licensing gun dealers and thinking of that in the context of whatever internal polling he was seeing showing the race, because we have not had as much public polling in this year. And I don't know if that's because, you know, frankly, the Tribune and other media organizations that usually do that sort of thing are in tighter fiscal times. We just haven't had as much public polling. And so you think of that, and then it was certainly apparent from the number of emails that he sent to his supporters. You know, I think there were six of them at three-hour intervals all day on Election Day. He was doing radio interviews. You know, candidates usually kind of step back on Election Day and let the voting play out as it is, I think. But his campaign at least was aggressively trying to get people to the polls, and it shows with only a 20,000 vote margin that was probably a smart thing.
Well, we know the governor had tried to ignore Jeannie Ives for a long time. That was the strategy, I think. As she started to get some money pumped into her campaign, got on TV, we started to see more attack ads going after her. So I'm sure the internal polling, like you said, was showing that he was in some trouble there and he needed to come out on the offensive. Now, I guess we know that Bruce Rauner has some problems, has some things he's got to work on here going into this general election. J.B. Pritzker, it was a much different atmosphere on election night as he sailed to victory in that primary. And Tony, in that respect, should we be looking at this point that Pritzker is the front runner? Should we be thinking of it that way, or is there just too much time?
I haven't seen too much about polls as far as how Pritzker and Rauner shape up against each other. I think there was one done a little bit before the primary, and I imagine some of those attitudes have already changed a little bit if somebody did not want to vote for Pritzker but and went with Daniel Biss or Chris Kennedy, and now they're faced with Rauner or Pritzker. That poll might look a little differently in a head-to-head matchup, but look, there's so much going against Rauner this year, really about any Republican, given what we've seen in other races around the country so far since Trump was took office. You're hearing so much about this blue wave of Democratic support across the country. Turnout on the Democratic primary side was about a little more than 1.2 million, I think is the rough number right now, which is a huge number in a Democratic primary for a midterm when you look at previous midterm elections. When the governor's been on the ballot the last few election cycles, it's just the turnout was much higher. And so is Pritzker the front runner? I guess I wouldn't hesitate to say yes at this point. This campaign's going to look very different in the next few months than it does here the Friday after the primary election.
And if I may point out, too, I mean, it's already looking a little different. Even Biss and Kennedy stood behind Pritzker on election night. They fully supported him, called on everyone who voted for them to support Pritzker. And this is in contrast to Jeannie Ives, who didn't even mention during her speech to stand behind Rauner.
Now, that being said, though, Charlie, you think there are progressives out there who are not very happy that J.B. Pritzker is the party's nominee and maybe, like you said, may not come out and vote for him the same way some people on maybe the far right may not come out and vote for Bruce Rauner?
Yeah, I think that's possible. But I would guess that the danger to the Rauner camp is much greater because, as Daisy said, Jeannie Ives, and as we mentioned earlier, Jeannie Ives has not enthusiastically said, now we all have to unite and get behind Bruce Rauner. You know, I know you guys are disappointed who supported me, but now we have to back the governor so he can take down Mike Madigan. She's not said that. And yet we heard clips from Kennedy, we heard clips from Biss saying that we need to unite because the goal for the future of our state is to get rid of Bruce Rauner. So I think that's a bigger difficulty. I would flat out say if the election were next Tuesday, Pritzker wins in a walk. The one big unknown is what other damning information is contained on those tapes with his discussions with Rod Blagojevich. Some of it was leaked before the primary. It apparently didn't damage him that much. But who knows what might be on there that will come out as we get into October that could really, really torpedo him.
Although that presupposes that the Tribune is holding back on what they have, or you know, I guess they could get something else coming in. But one thing that's interesting, though, I think that you know, as much as we're talking about will Republicans sit on their hands or not vote for the governor, I think we saw with President Trump's election that, you know, as much as there was the Never Trump movement and people were very divided on that, they ended up coming home for a candidate who had arguably some even bigger liabilities in terms of his, you know, things that came out in October, the Access Hollywood tape about his, you know, treatment of women. And currently in Illinois, President Trump, among Republican voters, according to the Paul Simon poll that I think Tony was referencing earlier, has an 83% approval rating. That's President Trump. Governor Rauner only had a 55% approval rating among Republicans. And yet, you know, in that Paul Simon poll for Republicans, 76-9 is how they would vote in the theoretical Rauner-Pritzker matchup. It's basically the same thing for Democrats. 80% of Democrats say they'd go with Pritzker to 9 for Republicans. So it's really going to be a question of turnout. You know, Republicans and Democrats both tend to go with, you know, their party's candidate if you're a strong partisan. So the question is who can turn out more people? And in midterm elections, traditionally in Illinois, the Republicans have an edge. But, you know, what we're seeing is President Trump and other factors do seem to be driving Democratic turnout, and that could make a big difference this year.
Well, we've seen a lot of polling that says that people are not very happy with the state of Illinois. They're maybe not happy with Democratic leaders or Republican leaders, but they're not that happy with the state. J.B. Pritzker's announcement this week, I guess his campaign theme, one of the big ones, is going to be Rauner failed. And Tony, is that enough for him? Does he have to talk more about what he's going to do rather than just the problems that Bruce Rauner has or maybe that he sees that Bruce Rauner has caused?
Well, the benefit of not having public office or not being the incumbent is you don't have a record to go on, and so you get to criticize and scrutinize the incumbent's record. That's true. Well, it was true for Pat Quinn, just like it's true now for Bruce Rauner. So I expect that's going to be a pretty effective, simple message for the Pritzker campaign to recite over and over and over again in the coming months. Just like Rauner will be using Mike Madigan as the embodiment of the machine politics that Pritzker's a part of and his own ads, and he'll be reciting that over and over and over again. We all know that they have the money to say it until from now to the rest of, you know, well past all of our lifetimes if they really want to. The one thing I guess I'd say to Charlie's point about the Blagojevich tapes is if there was an effect in the Democratic primary from those tapes, I don't know that I saw it. Pritzker did extremely well in the African-American wards in Chicago and in Cook County. He won with, I'm looking at some numbers here, just won with nearly two-thirds of the vote in a lot of these, in a lot of the South Side and the West Side of Chicago. The only areas where he was losing around Chicago were around Wrigley Field on the North Side, where Daniel Biss did a little bit better. But
and then Kennedy did well on the far Northwest Side, far Southwest Side, the the basically Democratic but conservative wards where a lot of firefighters, a lot of police officers live.
Well, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about this race. I think there's only about 7 months left, so plenty of time to look at that. Let's take a look at the attorney general races on election night this week. Brian, we had both races on the Democratic and Republican sides. Tell us what took place there.
Yeah, we're not going to have Pat Quinn to kick around anymore, much as he seems to want to get back into state government.
Well, there'll be another election in 2 years.
That's right. You never know.
Don't count them out.
State Senator Kwame Arrow Wool got a fairly narrow victory, but a win's a win over Attorney General Pat Quinn. But it was a very crowded primary field, and he will be taking on Erica Harold, the Urbana attorney. She's perhaps best known in public life as a former Miss America, also a Harvard-educated lawyer, feel compelled to add. The two of them will be going head-to-head this year for a post. You know, from the Democratic standpoint, this is a sort of plum opportunity, a rare opportunity to rise in state government because a lot of these statewide offices don't come open very often. Lisa Madigan's going to have held on to that job for 16 years by the time she's done. Secretary of State Jesse White will be coming to the end of 20 years in office this January, and if he wins re-election, we'll be looking for another four. There was a fierce competition among Democrats to get this nomination, and it's going to be an interesting fight. I hope, given the importance of the office, they can actually get some, serious consideration and airtime, given how much I'm sure the Pritzker-Rauner race is going to be sucking all the air out of the room.
Well, and Erica Harold seems to be maybe one of the stronger candidates that the Republicans have put up for that office in a long time. I think it's almost been an afterthought for many years. You know, they're not going to put somebody up with not a lot of name ID.
They basically had to draw straws to see who would run against the very popular Lisa Madigan in the past.
Tony, I guess the problem there is she has to worry about, like Brian was talking about here, voter turnout among Republicans, also the Trump factor, maybe the Bruce-Rauner factor. She has all that sort of weighing against her right now.
She does, and just like any other Republican running for comptroller or treasurer or secretary of state too. And I think she's got some, I think the little bit, the difference here between Erica Harold and a few of the other Republican candidates is that one is that she's run a campaign before, lost in a primary for Congress. And so she has some experience, is my point, in campaigning. And then two is just it seems like the Republican Party and Bruce-Rauner in particular is willing to fund her campaign or at least contribute significantly to it to make sure that voters know who she is, which she has going in her favor. That said, I think this year in particular, it seems like Republicans have an uphill battle in Illinois just because of the national mood right now and what you've seen in traditionally conservative districts around the country. And I think that that's going to play out in some of the congressional districts you see around Chicago and the suburbs that have long been held by Republicans that national Democrats see as in play in November. And it all kind of makes for a little bit of an unpredictable, at this point at least, November election results.
Charlie, I don't even know if I want to call them surprises in the legislature, but there were some longtime lawmakers who basically are getting the boot. They didn't win their primaries, and that includes the state senator, the Democrat Ira Silverstein. His name came up more recently as part of the some allegations against him of harassment later, I believe, by the inspector general to be
The harassment was not founded, but was found to have committed conduct unbecoming of a legislator, though that did not stop the Senate President Cullerton and Senate Democrats from trying to help him hold on to his seat. But the voters had a different outcome in mind.
And Eastern Illinois Representative David Rice, he was also defeated. And then Dan Burke, longtime Democrat from Chicago, he also lost in the primary. Any surprises that you saw other than that and your takeaway on that?
I'm not so sure that Burke's loss was necessarily that big of a surprise. And the reason I say that is that district has become more Hispanic over the years, that part of Chicago. And he didn't have the same kind of constituency as when he was first elected, what, 20-some years ago. And you wonder, because Speaker Madigan's district has changed in a similar fashion. There are a lot more Hispanics than there were when that district was first crafted. And so at some point down the road, I mean, it's unlikely that Madigan will lose in a primary, but my guess is once Madigan retires or leaves for whatever reason, you'll probably see a Hispanic elected from that district.
And Brian, just a few seconds here, but I guess we would understand the Silverstein loss because he got quite a bit of negative publicity there. David Rice, was that fallout from the legislature, some Republicans going back and voting for the tax increase last year? I believe he was one of those.
Yeah, I mean, there was an attempt to go after a lot of Republicans who had voted for the tax increase. A lot of those Republicans took themselves out of the running by deciding not to run for re-election. But he was really the only one, I think, who you could plausibly argue was brought down by that. The conservative group out there called the Liberty Principles PAC, run by the talk radio host and failed former gubernatorial candidate Dan Proft, was trying to be a kingmaker and trying to take down some incumbents and did not have a lot of success for a lot of money that they invested in it.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. Let's move on and we'll have Tony. We'll start with you.
Well, I'd turn right to not the November election, but the one right after that in the city of Chicago. We already have the race for Chicago mayor getting underway and jockeying for position. We have Gary McCarthy, the former Chicago police superintendent, who actually was brought in by Rahm Emanuel, fired by Rahm Emanuel after the video of the police shooting of Laquan McDonald was released. Now he's going for Emanuel's own job. And that's could be a very crowded race. You talked about Pat Quinn running in 2 years. It's very possible Pat Quinn runs in 1 year when the Chicago mayor's race is up in 2019.
Now you heard it here first, Charlie.
Well, I've mentioned before, and everybody's well aware of this, that we were deluged with all these ads, and most of it was enough to turn your stomach, just really repulsive stuff. But the bottom line is that there was something like $66 million spent on ads in the primaries for the two parties. Now, what might have $66 million bought? Well, out of the state's 9 public universities, their current budgets for 6 of the 9 is less than $66 million. So had those candidates decided to do something worthwhile rather than assault our sensibilities, they could have supported Chicago State or Eastern or Western or ISU or Governor State, Northeastern.
And Brian?
Yeah, I just want to note that in the 3rd Congressional District, all the attention was on Marie Newman's attempt to challenge incumbent Democrat Bill Lipinski. She was unsuccessful in doing that, sort of making a challenge from the left. But the Republican running on that side, a guy who is basically has Nazi affiliations, he's a Holocaust denier, he managed to get 20,000 Republican votes. It just goes, I think, I doubt that most of those people were supporting him knowing he was a Nazi. It just goes to show the power of party affiliation and people just kind of voting for who they think their party is.
All right, that will do it for today. We want to thank our guest, Tony Arnold. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and find us on NPR One, the production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station, NPR, Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.